We're here in our recording studio with Cindy Flickinger's first discipleship group. Thought you were going to be anonymous, didn't you?
No, I'm not.
It is your first discipleship group you've led, is it not?
That's correct.
Okay. Are you having fun?
Loving it.
She had to answer that. Yes. Right, because of his asking. That's right. And our topic is victory over thoughts. Now, you've all read. Tell me you've all read Changing Your Thought Patterns by George Sanchez. Yes. And you've all reviewed the handout, Identifying Wrong Thought Patterns. Right? Okay, good. And so we're all familiar with the two-step process on the front of that handout. Two steps being identify wrong thought patterns and then change them. And of course, Mr. Sanchez's pamphlet, Changing Them, is all about changing your thought patterns. Step two, so we're not going to discuss that today, how to do that, because he handles that better than we ever could. What we would like to talk about today is how to recognize wrong thought patterns that are inside our head, identifying those patterns so that we can change them, and how do we identify the wrong patterns. So, which of these, on the back page, well, let's run through the front pages real quick. It's not our topic, but the source of the thoughts: self, God, and demons. God and demons, of course, being spirits, and us being primarily spiritual beings, can communicate directly to us. Whatever the thought is, whether it is anger or lust or greed, if it has a demonic source or self source, the goal of demonic forces is always discouragement. Because if they can use anger to make you lose your cool and then discourage you in your Christian life and create the attitude that there's no fun in life anyway, so I may as well satisfy myself, and they've won. So that's just a little bit about how that works. There are more obvious thought patterns. That's point two: lust and greed and control and anger, things that we tend to recognize. But on the back, what we really want to talk about today, and we will start with Ms. Flickinger, because leadership is going first, setting the pace. Sure, that you bare your soul, so you don't have to do that. We want to talk about patterns, identifying wrong thought patterns that ladies particularly may struggle with. And so, which of those on the back page, Cindy, might you identify with?
I would say the one that jumps out to me the most is the expectations. Specifically with my husband and my kids, I expect them to act a certain way, and then when they don't, that I just can really become disappointed. And I find it interesting that you would, a lot of times I'll say, well, that's just the way I am. And it's so easy to just chalk it up as something that, well, that's just the way God made me deal with it. But really, it's just
so you were born to put expectations
right.
on people and hold them to that level
right.
of performance.
Right. Yeah. But to really identify that as sin, it opens you wide up. You know.
Well, give us an example of that. How does that come about? What might be an expectation?
Oh, anniversaries, birthdays. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your expectation of an anniversary would be Paris?
That'd be good.
Yeah, Paris would work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And his idea would be?
Cops.
Right.
That actually happened on our first anniversary. I said, okay, you tell me what you want to do, and I'll tell you what I want to do. And then maybe we can come to a compromise. And mine was to go to the hotel where we spent our wedding night, and horse and carriage ride and all this. And I said, okay, what chairs? And he said, stay home and watch Cops. So
you both had some expectations.
Yeah. The kid was the low part.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's a good one. You see the examples there. Let me explain what those examples are. Dating, most of these examples are a result of kind of an informal survey of mine, but one of the things that my wife tells me particularly is that, you know, after two dates, the expectations of where the relationship is going is often different in the minds mine is a lady, none is a man. There's an expectation range there. Dinner, that's my example. That's the men, you know. That's the get in the car, driving home from work, and envisioning dinner on the table. And the kids clean and sitting down. House is clean. White hair's on, makeup.
Yes.
And, yeah. So that's the deal. And then the job, you know, guys struggle with that a lot, I think. Career issues. So those are examples. This always happens to me. They can tell. This never happens to me.
You never take me out on dates.
You never take me out.
Yeah. You're going to watch Cops all the time.
That would be,
always.
That would be a clue. There's an expectation issue. Okay. All right. Somebody else. See, if you respond quickly, they don't want to have to call your name. So that everybody knows who you
well, denial jumped out at me when, before I got married, I thought, you know, if I could just be married, I would be happy. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, well, I was happy being married, but it didn't fulfill me. And then, well, when you kids, that will complete everything. And we had kids, and they're wonderful, and I love them, but I need more.
Mm-hmm. So now you're after money.
That's it. Well, now,
you pretty much covered the list here as an example. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, the one thing God hasn't given me. That's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you the fear of man. Every woman in the world worries about her appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Is she fat? Your hair's not straight enough. Your hair's too curly. Or it's not curly enough. It's not the right color. Mm-hmm. Your face isn't perfect.
Yeah, and that one just becomes... That is one of those thoughts that matures with us as we mature. You know, if you get to a place where you're really not worried about your appearance, this is actually pretty doable for a lot of guys. You know, guys could be 30, 40 pounds overweight and still think they're borderline Don Johnson. You know? Not a problem. Tattoos don't detract from my appearance. Yeah. Which may be a denial issue, I don't know. But nonetheless, you know, if you do get to a place where you get by the appearance issue, then there's simply something more subtle, like spiritual maturity. The second example is spiritual maturity. You know, we find ourselves walking through scenarios in our minds, planning ways that we can appear more spiritually mature to those around us, because that's how we gain status in the church, and to appear to be more spiritually mature. That's just a fear of man. It's just a more subtle, more insidious fear of man. You know, I analyze in my mind how people gain status at church, and then I try to appear to have achieved. So that one grows. That's the gift that keeps on giving. That one just grows right along with you. That's right.
I never thought of that kind of thought as being self-centered, though. Until, I mean, you're right. I mean, it is. But I've never thought of that because I've always worried about that.
Yeah, just
what, you know, what are people going to think of me?
Well, my husband told me one time, quite a few years ago, something like, you know, what,
are
you,
I
look okay, how
are you,
you know, I'm skinny enough today, or whatever.
Am I skinny enough today? That would be a particularly female question, I think, yes.
Yeah. And he said, you know, everybody's not focused on you. And I'm like, yeah.
What?
And that has stuck in my head all these years. Like, he's right, you know. People aren't just, you know, like I walk in, I think, oh, everyone's concerned about me or look at me, care what I look like, you know. And that's, I don't forget that one in my life. That just shocked me.
Did that prick your balloon a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Brought me down.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good observation, Melissa. It really is. It's certainly not other-centered.
I mean, you're certainly not worried about, you're certainly not trying to care for somebody else by worrying about how I appear.
Well, and today, so many people are saying, it's time for you to start doing something for you.
Just take some time.
Work on yourself.
You deserve it.
But I mean, who doesn't shower? Who doesn't eat? I mean, we all are care about ourselves desperately. And really the only reward is not doing things for yourself. There's so much more joy in doing things for other people.
Well, that's right. And this is... I would have to say most men probably actually shower for other people.
We're talking later.
But you're right. But you're right. Is there concern about that?
What about those... I mean, that... inside my mind, what goes on continuously pretty much my whole life is you go to church and what do I, you know, do I measure up to other people spiritually, you know? They're better than I am because they, you know these, you know, and I'm just constantly, well, you know, that's a very subtle attack that goes on. I don't know. Some people, I do that a little bit.
I do.
I used to be scared to go to church when I first started going to Hope, you know, and always had that same feeling. It's when I first started realizing it, but it's like I walk in and think, I just kind of wanted to leave because I felt real uncomfortable because I was constantly just measuring myself against other people, and it still goes on, you know.
That is, you cut across about five of these. I mean, you really did. It was really interesting because one of the things you address in there is this issue of discouragement. You know, I was comparing myself to people spiritually, which, you know, that 1 Corinthians 10:12, which is the verse right before your memory verse for this week, it says, "Lest he who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall." But the... So, prepare for attack on this creeping pride issue, which you kind of addressed the reverse of that. It wasn't a creeping pride in spiritual maturity. It was a discouragement because there's, at least in your mind, there was this appearance of spiritual maturity on the part of other people that you couldn't measure up to, which is just another way to discourage you.
It just paralyzes you. You can't go forward. You think, I'm not, you know, I'll never be, can't be. How do they do it? How do they get it? I want it. I want to grasp it. I can't, you know, and it just keeps me where I am instead of being able to move on.
Sounds like a good candidate for discipleship group.
Sign her up.
That's right.
But also, wouldn't that be where Satan comes in and uses that as a very viable attack, especially when it's him more likely putting those thoughts in there?
It's very sophisticated. But again, the goal of that was discouragement. And to some degree was accomplished. I mean, now you're seeing what that was, and Mr. Sanchez has equipped you with the tool to use.
Read it once a week or once a day.
We all need to. That's right.
On that line, this is something that I guess it was last summer, where I was just being attacked right and left with the discouraging thoughts of, I'm not a good mother, I'm not a good wife, I'm not a good housekeeper, I'm not a good anything, and it kept feeding down to where it would negate how I saw my boys, and it came to the point where I was battling with thoughts of suicide the whole bit. And one time, and this is what I'm coming from with that, is at one point I saw Harold and Deborah, and I said, all right, guys, just sit down, I want to talk to you. And I just laid everything out, all the thoughts, everything that's happening. And, you know, some of it's truth, quote unquote, from other people speaking things, but it's not the real truth. And therefore, I would be caught.
You mean the things you were discouraged about?
Things that
there was some truth in them, but
in the past, maybe there was some parts of truth, and other things are just things I see, think, and feel. And therefore, it was really getting some negative. And when I sit down and talk to Father Deborah, Harold's like, well, Janet, that's just Satan's attack. You know, he's in there to discourage you and catch you down, and you just need to rebuke Satan in the name by the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ and stand under him and crawl back under his arms, which I did. And it was interesting. Even before I had told my husband all this, he's like, what's changed about you when I got back home that day? He said, you're lighter. You're not, you don't seem so tied down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say that in some of these senses, and, you know, I don't know, with what Sarah go through all of these and very subtly attack, throw in long thought patterns. And so this is just one of those things where I think, when you see ourselves in a spiral, we need to know there may be that point where we need to rebuke these ones, stand under the blood of Christ, and ask him to change our thought patterns. And like said, thrust and chase it. So, rethinking correctly.
Right.
What Christ says is true.
It clearly involves both. I mean, what you've done is identified the pattern.
Right.
And you've invoked spiritual power.
Right.
But you've also exercised your will.
Right.
And it was a process that,
even though I knew the thoughts were wrong, and I was like, I don't know why I'm at this point. I've got a great life. You know, I have a good husband. I have good kids. My life is basically good. But yet I was still consistently going down the wrong path and feeling it was right.
Because you hadn't identified those patterns.
Well,
as what you really need to address.
Right. Thinking those thoughts were probably somewhat right and allowing them to be justified in my mind, which sounds like bizarre.
That's why we're having this discussion.
That's right.
This is part of the topic, is because it's very common. You know, that verse you did this week, no temptation, but such as is common to man. You're experiencing the same thing.
Right.
That women the world over are experiencing today.
Mm-hmm.
But you're learning to identify those and push them aside.
Okay, I've got another one for you.
Fire.
How do you take, I don't know if any of the rest of you, but since it's common to all men. okay, when you have been fed wrong information through various people in your life, and those thoughts are what crowds in, would they fall in here? When your thought patterns are triggered by maybe wrong things that people have said to you,
mm-hmm.
in the past, or...
Sure, that create some of these
right.
categories. Yeah, that may fall under at least partially under failure to engage the mind, because what you have there is you have to take the advice you're getting and measure it against Scripture.
That's right.
And if you've engaged your mind so that you can discern what is consistent with Scripture and what is inconsistent, then you start peeling all that off. It also may be a fear of man issue, where you're concerned about what they think, so you're overly concerned about what they tell you because you want their approval. You know, you're seeking to find a way to satisfy them rather than to line your thoughts and your life up with Scripture. And I say you, and I'm not singling you out.
I'm
discussing how this works because I am intimately familiar with the issue.
Well, I have sort of an example sort of like that. I grew up without a Christian background. So when I became a Christian, I became a Christian very young. And I was afraid to get married because I did not want to be a failure as a wife. I just assumed I would be what my mother was, and I did not want to do that. So, but people always, unfortunately, I was in hope for a long time before I got married. So they would always say, you're not your mother, she's not a Christian, you are, and you have a plan in front of you. God's plan to show you how to do it. And all you have to do is find it and work it out. And I was still afraid to get married, but I did. But God blessed me through that and actually helped me quite a bit because I asked people's advice, Christian people that I knew who were married.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped me walk through it. And I am very, very different from my mother, and they notice it quite a bit. So... It was almost a paralyzing fear that I could not get married. And it's almost the same fear of wanting to have children, it's like I can't do it because I'll grow up like I did and it was awful. And I don't want that, but it's not the same because I'm not the same anymore.
Mm.
Because you can go to the Bible and find what's right,
right.
Instead of
right.
doing what's wrong.
Yeah. So where you ended up was with not without fear of marriage, but with a healthy fear of marriage.
Right.
You know, if you've never been married and you're not afraid of it, you just don't know.
Yeah, no,
an arrogant problem. but a paralyzing fear. That's a different.
Right.
Right.
So I tend to have those paralyzing fears of things that I cannot do. I just cannot do it.
Yes. It's interesting. There seems to be a pattern. Just in talking with men and women, there seems to be, not exclusively, but more likely for women, for ladies, to have fears that are kind of paralyzing. And for men suffer from exactly the opposite, which is oblivion. You know, if I just ignore it and bury my face in my work and my football, you know, it will go away. So it's an interesting pattern. One more.
Can I just mention something that
yes, you can.
What is so freeing to me is that we are not a victim to this. Mm-hmm. This is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And once we've identified them, that just takes all the thrill out of it. You know, now we've identified it, and now that is a choice for us to continue in that or not to do it. I think it's so easy for women, a lot of women and me too, to just say, well, I can't help that. I'm the victim of this particular thought or this pattern or expectation, and that's just my lot in life. But that is just not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so freeing to me to not be chained and bound to that.
Being controlled by your feelings, I think that is the biggest thing, because I've always said I'm not an emotional person. Woman. I just never, you know, I thought emotionally you had to cry a lot.
Yeah.
Which I don't do that. But I let my feelings and my emotions.
That's great.
You know, guide me. Well, I feel this way about this situation or whatever. So, and then being ruled by that instead of the truth and going to that. And I think that's a big thing with women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you think that being controlled by feelings.
I mean, it's so hard.
Get beyond the feeling.
Get
to,
beyond
to
the feeling.
To analyze the real.
Yes, and go this direction.
And men are so patient on that issue, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. What do you mean?
And then, on top of that, after you figure out that, you know, being controlled by feelings is wrong, then you feel guilty for even feeling the feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're feeling the opposite way.
You're back to the discouragement.
Yeah.
And Sanchez addresses that very well, too. He says, express your gratitude for how God made you. The example he uses is lust with men.
Mm-hmm.
But it applies to this exactly. I thank you for creating that set of emotions, but use them, help me to use them properly.
But Jim, I feel like we've been programmed for this, and I think our parents, or mine in particular, did the best with the information that they had.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never told I can choose my thoughts. I mean, I just was never given that tool. And I think if we can teach our kids this at a young age,
mm-hmm.
you know, I understand that when Johnny hit you in the eye, it hurt. But let's see what we can do about it and make it proactive. I think we could raise a much more healthier generation of kids.
I don't think there's any question. I identify with that. I was 23, I think, and in college before anybody ever just flat told me and explained to me that I decided what to think about it.
Mm.
And I was just absolutely shocked that I didn't have to participate in my mind in the meat market every day at the student union. And a little disappointed, frankly, too, that I now had no excuse. That's exactly right. All right, on that, that's probably enough.